Hello everyone, welcome to the Laura Horn Art Podcast. Thank you so much for being here. This week we are continuing with the Redefining Success series. This is interview number 7 out of 9. Time is flying on by, and I just want to say a big thank you to everyone that has been supporting the series, leaving reviews, sharing stories, sending messages, and reaching out to the guest artists. I can't put into words how happy it makes me and how fulfilling it is to be able to do these interviews and share these incredible stories. So this week I am sharing a conversation that I had with abstract artist Stephanie Stark. Stephanie didn't start creating until later in life after years and years of wanting to paint. Once she started, there was no turning back. It wasn't long before Stephanie was exhibiting her work in shows, galleries, and art fairs across the US and even internationally. In this episode, Stephanie talks about dealing with art rejection, making bad paintings, and letting go of the pressure to stick with one style. This includes a really interesting segment around taking online classes and how sometimes it can be challenging to process what you have learned and put your own stamp on it. There's also great information about working with galleries. And if you head over to the show notes at laurahornart.com/the podcast/135, Stephanie has included some really handy resources. There's a lot in this one. It's practical as well as inspiring. And ultimately, it's about being gentle with yourself as you grow as an artist. You can find out more about Stephanie over at her website, stephaniestarkart.com. Or over on Instagram at Stephanie Stark Art. So with that said, let's get straight into the conversation. So let's begin with, when did you start painting?
Okay, so I started painting actually, like you said, later in life. I was 47 actually when I began. I had wanted to paint for many years before then, but I had young kids and I didn't really know how to start. I knew I wanted to try it, and I've always had a creative side, but I'd never taken any formal education in art or anything like that other than, you know, art class in school. It's actually funny. I finally asked, my daughter had an after school art class in our neighborhood, and I asked the artist who was teaching the kids if she would consider teaching adults, and she didn't want to at first. It just wasn't something she'd ever done, but she decided to go ahead and do that. And when she did, I was there, and I had previously purchased an easel, and it took me 7 years before I actually got to the point where I started taking or going to her studio and painting with her and a few other adults who were doing it too. And once I started, it really, I think, was just a confidence thing. I wasn't sure I knew what to do. And it turns out that all you really need to do is apply paint to the canvas. And it wasn't that hard. As soon as I started, I was hooked, and I've been painting ever since. So that was in 2017 when I started.
So when you began painting in that class, what kind of style of painting were you doing?
I started with very abstract, almost geometric. I had circles and arcs. I loved blending the paint colors right on the canvas, which I still sometimes do. Someone described it to me maybe as a tighter style than what I'm doing now. So I started with shapes and lines and sort of connecting them. It was all intuitive, you know, based on just feeling and emotion and trying things out, trial and error. And it was nice to have a little bit of feedback, a little bit like suggestions here and there from the teacher and some of the other people in the class as I started.
So you were taking this class and you fell in love with painting. Were you painting during the day, in the evenings, on weekends? When were you putting in your art hours?
The class was mid-morning. It was twice a week. but I painted on my own at home in between and at night. And whenever I could get those free moments, I just kept exploring. And eventually, it was maybe about a year after I started, it became easier to just paint from home. I developed a space in our home where I could paint and accumulated brushes and paints and tools, as we all do when we love to create. And eventually I had everything I needed right where I was, and it became more and more I would paint from home, and eventually stopped attending that group painting session, basically.
And what did your home setup look like?
Well, it was in our basement, and I was lucky because I had a sink and some shelves in a small room. It was like a work sink, so that was perfect. And that was a great place for me to begin. And then more recently, in January of this year, I took a leap and rented outside space to paint in, which is filled with natural light and is bigger. So it's something that I had been dreaming of over the years. So I've now done both, like work from home and now working outside of the home.
And how do you find that the two compare? What was it like working at home compared to now?
What happened was the paintings that I have been making got larger over time. I started to want to work in a series of related works, and I kept feeling like I couldn't really make that happen in the space that I was in our basement, because I would take a few steps back and crash into something. And, you know, I couldn't really get the distance I wanted to be able to see even the painting I was working on, let alone more than one at a time. And I really wanted to be able to create and work on several paintings at once and have space to back up. And then also just having natural light. Occasionally I would find myself pulling everything upstairs, you know, and trying to make it work from my kitchen just because it was a gorgeous day and I wanted to have light around me. So the studio that I'm in now, luckily for me, it's very close to my home. So it's not hard for me to get there. It doesn't really take time. And like I said, it's filled with natural light, and it does have a couple of great walls, perfect for holding canvases. It's been a huge change for me, and it's given me the opportunity to work in related, you know, painting multiple canvases at the same time and going from one to the other and being able to look at them as I paint something else for inspiration. It's really been a blessing.
Do you still do some work from home, or do you almost exclusively paint now in the studio?
Occasionally I do paint at home. I've kept some small sets of paint and pads of paper and sketchbooks at home. And if I just sort of feel creative and for whatever reason don't want to leave the home, I'll play. But I also do most of my sort of what I call the business side of work, which is on the computer. And there's quite a lot of that with social media and with reaching out and networking with other artists and galleries and submitting to art shows, all of those things. I also have taken a few online art courses, some about the business side of art and some about the actual practical painting and process. So all of that I usually do from home.
So that's interesting. I always find it fascinating how artists split up their time and move between different spaces, because that can be quite challenging.
I like that I can always do work from home if I want to, but then if I'd like to be out in my creative space, that's an option too. It's kind of nice to have a separation actually between the business angle and the and the place where I'm creating. So it's a bit of back and forth, I suppose, because I'm taking photos over in the studio and then I'll upload them here in my home and do the work, that kind of work here, edit the photos and those kind of things.
Was it difficult or easy to find a studio space?
It's a funny story. Right now, because of the pandemic, there's a lot of office space available where I am. And I started looking at commercial space, couldn't quite find the right thing. And then actually it was my husband who found the space I'm in now, which is actually an apartment. The apartments also were giving out amazing deals. And so we decided to just go ahead and try that. And it was set up in a wonderful way for what I want to do. So it wasn't very hard, actually, once we started.
So it pays to think outside the box a bit as far as what the space could be, as opposed to always looking for like a more traditional studio space. It could be an apartment, it could be a retail shop. There's lots of different options. So you started painting in 2017?
Yes.
So that's not too long ago. At what point did you know that you wanted it to be more than a hobby?
I think the first year to 2 years, I really was just practicing what I was doing and building confidence, I guess. I didn't know where it would go, where it would take me, but the more I did it, the more I wanted to do it, and the more time I spent on it, the more people found out about it and asked me about it, and I started to do some work for friends. It was actually my kids had, at my children's school, the art teacher there put together a show for parents and faculty. And I remember learning about it and wondering, I'm a parent at the school. Should I participate in this? And I decided to go ahead because I had the paintings. So I did. And that was technically my first show, which was, of course, very tiny and up for, I don't know, maybe 3 weeks in the school. But it was the first time I showed my art, and I did get a lot of positive feedback from the other parent community and teachers there who would stop me and say that they saw my work and they really enjoyed it. That was sort of, you know, I just decided to go ahead and give that a try, and it was a positive experience. And like I said, technically my first show.
And did that experience spur you on to look at other ways that you could share your work and other shows?
Yeah, it did. I started to pay attention to the art community in my neighborhood and in my city. And I just noticed calls for art where, you know, a group or a curator or a gallery was putting on a show and looking for artists to have their work considered to be part of it. And I enjoyed the idea of that. And I started to submit. So slowly but surely, I did more and more shows and eventually expanded beyond my local region to other states and bigger events. I have enjoyed it. It's been a confidence booster for me in a way to build upon, you know, each time it's like another step. And I always end up meeting new people through the new event. And once I got an award at, I came in second place in the abstract category at, I guess, a regional art association show. And that actually happened very early in the first year of me showing. But like I said, it really can validate what you're doing. And so many times as artists, I think we work in an isolated manner. You know, we don't always have people seeing our work. or other artists around us. And so it is nice to participate in an event where a lot of artists are also showing and looking at each other's work. And of course, you're broadened when you do that, I think.
Did you consider other options for sharing your work, or are galleries the main way that you get exposure for your art?
I have done some art fairs, which are different than galleries. They're a much shorter time frame usually than a gallery show, but the maximum I've done is 5 days. There have been ones that are just on the weekend or 3 days. That's another kind of large venue, which tends to bring a lot of traffic through in a shorter amount of time. So I have done that. I would say that the other main way I show my work is on social media, on Instagram mostly. I do have a website and I have work on it. I have started to write some blog posts, which are also located on my website. But so far, those have primarily been the ways that I have shown my work. Although I am thinking now that I have a big enough space of having an open studio in the fall, because I will have the ability to not to bring people down to the basement, but instead into a light-filled apartment studio with ample space to show work. Also sort of the creative space of an artist. I'm thinking that through. And more, I think artists are hosting their own shows, so to speak, whether it's an actual show or a combination of sharing my creative space and the work. I'm not really sure how I'll frame it yet, but I think that's in my future.
I often get asked about the benefits of gallery representation versus representing yourself. You've had quite a bit of experience with galleries, so I'm wondering if you could talk through some of the benefits of working with a gallery.
Sure. The primary benefits are that the gallery is a recognized venue, typically, and gives credibility to you as an artist and to your artwork, as well as the fact that they have their network of customers and interested people that probably aren't your people at all. So to show through a gallery will bring a whole new cadre of people to see your work and to find out about you as an artist. Also, they will promote the show, you know, whether it be through snail mail flyers, online, etc. They spend time promoting the work. When you're solo and representing yourself, you have to do all of that. And you are solely responsible for your audience and for drawing people to you 100% yourself. In order to have a successful solo show, you really have to develop that audience, which takes time. One great way to start to do that is if you do have a booth at an art fair, for example, having an email sign-up list is a great way to begin gathering an audience. I also have a newsletter that I send out about every other month. So those people over time continue to hear from me and hear about my next show or what new things I'm doing. It's a great way to keep in touch and to, again, develop that network. A gallery has that far more well established, I think, than independent artists, especially just beginning. So that's a great advantage. However, the big difference too is the gallery will take as much as 50% of what your work sells for. Whereas if you sell it on your own, obviously you do not split the commission. There's no fee that that you have to pay someone else. So that's a big reason that many artists today have worked on their websites and their own shops and their own audiences so that they can launch a collection for sale themselves without having to share any kind of earnings that they get.
Yeah, I guess it's a lot of weighing up because, as you said, there's a lot of time involved in doing the promotional side of things and building the audience. But I guess, you know, many artists are doing some kind of combination of both too, which is always possible.
I think that's very popular now. I think just most galleries represent more than one, you know, obviously they represent however many artists they have. It's not like if you're represented by a gallery, you get a show, you know, even every year. You might not even get a solo show. It might be every other year. So typically there are artists that do both and will release collections themselves to some extent and also work with galleries as well. If you're working with galleries that are in another state or further away from you, then there's no question of representation in your local area. But if you are working with a gallery like right in your city or your town, they may want to talk to you about that they want to be the source of sales. So that's something to consider. Mm. I do know an artist who was careful not to sign on with any local galleries because she wanted to represent her work completely herself where she lived.
Yeah, I can see how there could be some issues around that, you know, if you are promoting your work directly to your audience, whereas the gallery is wanting people to come via the gallery. And I can see how you need to be, I guess, a little bit careful.
The other thing that you have to do if you are working with galleries in really almost any capacity, you want to keep your price that you would sell it for from yourself on your website or directly in person with someone the same as the gallery would sell it for, because a gallery will not want to represent you if it's clear to people or they can find out that if they buy directly from you, they'll be paying half of what they have to pay if they buy through the gallery. So it's understood that if the gallery sells it, it's $1,000. If you sell it, it's $1,000. So you might make only $500 if you sell it through a gallery, but you still do it that way so that you preserve the relationship with the galleries.
Yeah, that's a very good point. So when you are applying for galleries and shows, rejection is inevitable. So it's going to happen and it can be hard. What has your experience been with getting those dreaded rejection letters?
Well, you're right, Laura. It's inevitable. So that's the first thing to know, is that you could be Picasso and applying to these shows today and he would get rejections, or any other famous artist would absolutely still get rejections, because the way jurors and curators select work for a show is dependent on two things. It's dependent on the quality of the work, but also on the relationship between the pieces selected and if there's a theme, so that a juror will say that sometimes they might love a piece of work that was just clearly exceptional, but given the other pieces that were submitted and the selection process and how they were relating to each other, that amazing painting may not fit with the show as it develops. And so that's a strange phenomenon, because it means that our rejections aren't always because the work is not good enough. there are many, many reasons that a work might be rejected. So that's the first thing to keep in mind. When I first started, it didn't bother me to get rejections because I was expecting it. And the thrill of getting in would go a long way if I did into one or the other. But I did end up having one experience where it was very difficult for me. I was just so hopeful that I would get into one show that I felt I was a good match for. And it was in my local region. It was female artists. And I really felt like I fit and I really wanted to be part of it, but I didn't get in. And so that one was hard. And I took time and I ended up coming out of that really thinking about how to cope with rejection as artists. And there are several ways. And one, I think, is to talk to other artists. Of course, there are always people ahead of you or behind you on the creative journey in terms of when people have started and the experience people have. So it really helps a lot to have a network of other creatives who understand what you're doing and might understand this kind of process. And if you're struggling with something, just share what your challenge is or what you are experiencing. And 9 times out of 10, you will find others that have either been through this something similar or can give you advice or just can boost your spirits because they understand sort of the creative journey. Those people aren't always family or are close friends. So it really does pay to have a network of artists and people you know in the art community to just talk to and normalize it all with. Another thing that helped me, sometimes I would, if I got a rejection, I would quickly find, as soon as I could, a new thing to apply to, a new call for art that I was interested in, and I would submit to that so that I always had one sort of something out there being considered. And that sometimes gave me hope and a sense of control that I could keep trying and that the more you try, the more you apply to, the more likely you are to be accepted. On the other hand, with this particular experience, it really made me pause and I needed to take a break. So that's also, it's almost the opposite, but depending on the circumstances, taking a break can be healthy. I think maybe reconnecting with the joy of art making without focusing on the outcome or the concrete acceptance or non-acceptance into a show is helpful. So for me, I would sort of leave my art making space and visit a garden nursery or a bookshop or a natural place of beauty or an art museum or just a hike outside and take inspiration back and just do work that was purely for the process. And that can be helpful. And lastly, taking a class or joining some kind of challenge that isn't demanding and necessarily, but just feels joyful, I think can also be helpful because it gets your mind off of, you know, whether your art is good enough. And it really is just about creating. And again, I ended up finding a 3-week sketchbook course soon after that rejection I spoke of. And that was the perfect thing for me. It really allowed me to sort of ignore external influences. It gave me time to kind of reassess and explore what felt good in my art making. And like I said, without the pressure to produce something that I could present and show, it was more about relaxing. And it was just what I needed at the time. So those are some tips that I have found helpful in terms of managing the sort of acceptance or rejection from art calls.
Yeah, and those tips they're very broadly applicable because you could use those for any kind of, I guess, rejection or creative block that you're experiencing in your art practice. And I love how they're so varied. You have examples of where the thing that might be most helpful is chatting to people and talking through what has happened. But then on another occasion, it might actually be spending some time alone, like going to a gallery and just relaxing and fully unwinding. So it's good to know that there's no right or wrong way to approach anything. And I guess for the most part, it's about being in tune with yourself and knowing or listening to what it is you need at any given time.
It's so great to hear you say that, because just the other day, something happened and I thought about this because I had on my calendar to submit to a call for art at a really fine art institution nearby. I was in their last show, and it's prestigious. I fully had the art at the ready to submit, but for whatever reason, I couldn't figure out like what I wanted to submit for that particular topic. They had a theme, and maybe it was just that I was busy with other things in my life, but it was hanging on me, and I kept trying to do it. And then I ultimately decided not to apply. It was like, since I've been on this path of applying frequently, it felt really weird not to apply. But as soon as I realized that that was an option, and of course it's an option, like, but you know, I just had it in my mind that of course I would apply to that. It's a good one. It's one of the good ones. Like, I'm gonna, you know, I don't want to miss that one. But you know what? It's not that big of a deal if you do miss one. And for whatever reason at the time, it wasn't working. It wasn't flowing for me. And so once I gave myself the permission just not to do that one, I felt better. And I realized it's just what you said about being in tune with yourself and not putting too much pressure on ourselves, you know, in any one direction. So I don't know. It's just kind of a funny thing that happened.
There's a lot to be said for listening to those gut feelings or feeling those gut feelings. And sometimes you can't really understand why you might feel a certain way, but you just get this kind of like, ugh, you know, something doesn't feel quite right here. It's not flowing. It's almost like you're having to work too hard to do something. There's no ease in it. I do feel like often there's a sign there that's, you know, it's not quite the right thing or the right time. And I know certainly in my own experience of running an art business that becoming more fluid and flexible and being able to understand that things move in cycles that I don't fully understand has has helped enormously. And it comes down to what you said. It's like letting go of the pressure, you know, just going, okay, maybe this isn't quite right now. And often I find that after that, usually sometime down the track, that thing or theme sort of reappears in another way, but it's better. Like, it comes back clearer, stronger, and I'm like, this is why I hit that little roadblock back there, because it wasn't quite right in that form, but this is the show, or this is the thing that I need to do now. So it's interesting.
I agree with you. Yeah, I do. I agree with you. It's true. It's about listening to ourselves, and it shows up in our work for sure. In our creative work, I think, you know, if we're forcing it, it's never as good as when we're relaxed and refreshed and, you know, coming from a place of calm or whatever. So this time it just wasn't meant to be, but that's okay. So
it makes me think about your work and how it's changed over the years. Because you mentioned at the beginning of this podcast that you were working with more, geometric shapes and things like that. How did that style evolve into what it is that you create now?
Now I do still paint abstracts that involve shapes, but I often paint nature-related and floral-inspired paintings that are loose and abstracted, but still clearly inspired by nature and flowers. That evolved a little bit over time. It started to happen back in that class I first took. Once the flowers kind of started coming in, they've never left. And I think that it comes probably from when I was growing up. My mother loved fresh flowers and always made sure that we had them in our house. Every week or so, if we didn't have flowers from our garden, she would buy them and arrange them in our kitchen. And I watched her do it and helped her sometimes. And I learned how to arrange flowers growing up with her that way. So my mother actually passed away before I started painting. So she's never seen them, but I think that the flowers come in part, of course, because they're beautiful and they do inspire me, but I think it's a connection that I have with her, even though she's passed on in a way. So she really, I credit her as the one who taught me about beauty, not just in flowers, but to see things that are beautiful, to pause and to see them. And she also loved art and took me to museums. So I think that that link is there for me. And of course, I am more and more mesmerized by flowers now as an adult than as a kid when I was helping her arrange them. Of course, they're pretty, but they were flowers. I wanted to go off and go be with my friends or whatever. But now I really look at them and appreciate them and their delicacy and fragility and their color, the span of color in nature and the life cycle aspect of nature. All of that goes into my work now. So it's much less tight and more free. Even my more geometric pieces do still have, they're still influenced by nature for sure.
That's a beautiful way to keep the memory and the feeling of your mum alive.
Thank you.
A lot of people struggle with finding their style. It comes up again and again. Was it something that evolved quite naturally for you, or did you have moments where you felt doubt, you felt insecure, confused about what kind of art you were making and where it was all heading?
Yeah, there have definitely been times of doubt and confusion. I ended up taking an intensive art practice class the beginning of the pandemic, and it was online, but it was intense in terms of, I think it was a 12-week course, and it was involved. For me, it was excellent because I never went to art school, and it addressed issues of composition, color harmony, color value differences, all of the sort of principles of art or good art making that I never really learned. And it was, you know, I wanted to kind of educate myself. Well, what's interesting is during that course, my style evolved and I was trying to apply all of the principles I was learning into each thing I painted. And maybe it was just sort of too hard to be taking all of that information in quickly and then turning it around and applying it naturally into the piece. But the work was a little forced and the style did change. I started doing doodles kind of in the work, and I was playing with differences within the work, differences of all kinds, you know, something small, then something big, something jagged, then something smooth, like those kinds of differences to see how to interest the eye and move the eye around and things like that. But somewhere along the way, I sort of lost what felt like my style. And I remember feeling very unsure, thinking, oh my gosh, my work before this class was better than it is now. You know, how terrible. But I think it was just that I was digesting so much information. It took time to kind of come out of that. And my style now, it feels more like me. And some of the things that were in prior work, I think, have sort of reappeared in a more natural way. But I understand those principles in a deeper way. And that also has elevated, I think, my work, or just helped me understand why something isn't working maybe better than I used to. So I think that's a very long answer to your question, but for sure, there were times that I was thinking, wait a minute, now like this looks like what my teacher made and this isn't me. And I kind of like it objectively, but it doesn't feel like me. And there were all of those things running through my head. And I asked my teacher about it, and he said, look, you're doing exactly what you should be doing. If you feel it was a reassuring response to, well, wait, am I abstract or am I floral or am I, it's really okay to do both and to incorporate both together even. I realized that it doesn't have to be any one way. And I could have a collection of florals on paper, and then I could have a series of more abstract work based heavily on shapes. But I'm more relaxed about it now. Of course, that always helps to be, just feel like I've processed a lot of that. I don't feel that I have to be rigid one way or another. I sort of let it come, and it works out. And I think what my teacher really explained to me is the thing that unifies all of my work, of course, is me and my experiences and my influences and what inspires me. And so that's really what will tie all your work together. Even if it doesn't seem like it quite has happened yet, it will come.
I'm glad that you've spoken about what it can be like when you are going through an online course, because it is a challenge to learn a lot of new things and be influenced by a teacher's style and then mix that up with your own style. Like, that's a whole process, and it's not always a comfortable process, but things come out of it, like you described, when you give it a bit of time to kind of percolate and you grab on to the things that you want to grab on and you let some of the things that maybe don't fit with you go. But I've certainly heard others, including some of the students in my classes, talk about this, about, oh, you know, like I love this, but it looks too much like your art, or, you know, this doesn't even feel like me. Like, it can be quite confusing when you are going through an online course.
Yeah.
But it's great to hear you talk about it now that it's quite a bit of time has passed and you have been able to relax and let some of those pressures go, and you've seen that your work has elevated, like you've grabbed onto the things that you needed to, and it's been helpful. So that's very encouraging for anyone who's kind of feeling that confusion at the moment.
And you know, someone asked the teacher about that, about like, doesn't it bother you that some people just sort of end up making work that's just like yours? And his answer was no, because it's temporary. Mm. And it's just because we're trying something new. And so we're, as students, so we're kind of, okay, well, let's do this and let's do it this way. And let me try that. I haven't, you know, I don't know. The key is it's temporary, because as soon as you start focusing on the outside world and the things that come to you and inspire you, you know, your touch will filter through all of it, you know, eventually be the thing that defines your work as yours.
That's a very good answer. It's temporary. I have seen that so many times with students where they make art that looks very close to the teacher, but then you look at what they're making a year or two later and they've evolved it. Like, they've brought some completely new ideas and experiences in, and they might only have just little bits left of what they learned through that particular online course. And I'm always amazed. Like, I'm like, wow, it's a really satisfying feeling to see that. So I love that little bit of advice that you got around it's temporary. Like, it's, you don't need to really worry about it. And I just feel like there's so much pressure and stress, and you talked about becoming more relaxed and not worrying so much about having this super defined style or working only in one particular way, and that once you started to ease up around that, you felt better.
That's when my style returned, kind of, I feel like. So I have these pieces I made during the class, and I'm like, oh, that this is my experimental phase where I was trying this and that, and I was focusing on these elements of creating, or it's just really interesting. I think every artist's work evolves over time naturally. Of course, that's true as we try more things and grow older and experience more of life. So I guess we just have to let it flow, basically. It sounds very, I don't know, like 60s or something, but the more that we can do that and just be in the moment, I think.
Yeah, I certainly relate to that, even in my own experience in the last year or two. I've just started being much less like caring in a way, and it's quite liberating, like, just to sort of go, you know what, I don't care so much. I just want to enjoy being an artist and living a creative life.
Well, that's the secret, because, right? Because then the joy you feel will come through your work.
It always comes back to that, doesn't it? Like, finding the techniques, the processes, the way of working, even the little things, like when you get up, you know, when you get up in the morning, what do you do? Do you like painting first, or you like doing this? Like, getting to know yourself is so valuable and so good.
Yes, it's true. And the other thing is, it's inevitable. Just like it's inevitable that you'll get rejection if you submit to art calls, like, it's inevitable that we make really bad art sometimes, even a lot of the time. Like, it's just inevitable. And that's the only real way to learn. And sometimes we can save a piece and turn it around. And every once in a while, there's one that's just not worth you know, that effort, maybe. But I feel like that's important to say, because nobody shows their bad art, you know, on social media, or, you know, their mistakes and things like that. So I think it's important to realize, like, there are those days that you come away and you're like, I ruined that painting, or I don't like this work. It's not working the way I want it to be. It's a process, and it's just part of the journey.
So what do you do on those days where you feel like you're going backwards, or you come out at the end of the day and you're like, well, this is just rubbish?
Well, it depends. Sometimes you're at that point where you feel like, oh, you really think you've ruined this. You can't really do much more. And suddenly, like, you're free, and whatever you do ends up being really kind of interesting and amazing. Like, sometimes that happens. Like, you almost have to get to that point of like, I don't care anymore. And then you're loose and free, and like, whatever you do, and they're like, wait, that's kind of interesting. That can happen, but it's a risk. One of my favorite paintings came about that way. That's one way.
For me, that happens sometimes, but there are also times where it's quite clear that I should have stopped painting. Like, do you know when, and I think this is when the negative emotions come in and you kind of sabotage yourself, and it's because you're kind of grumpy or you're getting cross and it's not feeding the creative practice in a good way.
For me, often that happens when I'm tired.
Yes.
And I may have already been at it for a few hours and it's still sort of not where I want it, or whatever it is. But if I can identify that, I stop. And I do think that walking away from the piece is helpful. It's helpful to get distance, you know, when you feel like it's not working, because when you come back the next day or in 2 days, turn the piece around, whatever you need to do to not see it for some period of time, when you come back, you can see it differently. Sometimes it's not as bad as you thought, and sometimes it really is, and you have some decisions to make, but you can see the choices more clearly. Either this needs a whole new this something, or maybe it's actually not as bad as you thought and you're going to keep going or whatever. So for me, yeah, stepping away can really be the thing that I need to recognize that's it's time.
Yeah, I've had pieces that I've stepped away from for a very long time. Like I've put them in storage and turn them around so that they're facing against the wall and I don't have to look at them and then come back to them 6 months later or 2 years later and being like, oh, that's not so bad. After all, I quite like that. Like there's something interesting there. So the gift of perspective is definitely a good one for sure.
Yes, you lose that when you get too tired, I think. So then you're in danger of just overworking it. And so it is good to take those breaks, even if you come back within the same day or the next day. I think it can help a lot.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head when you said that often happens when you are tired. As soon as you said that, I was like, yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's when you are just, you've run out of energy, but you're sort of pushing on anyway. It's all about learning, isn't it? Learning about yourself.
Yeah, I think so. And try not to be hard on yourself if that happens, because it happens to everybody. It's not a unique thing. It's just the way it is. And we're not always sort of in that right mindset or whatever it is. Like there's so many things that affect us all the time. So I think we just have to remember that the most important thing is to keep painting, to keep practicing and keep doing it. And that's why I had said, you know, realize there will be a lot of work that, you know, doesn't end up on Instagram or whatever. Right. So it's just the way it is.
Speaking of Instagram, let's talk a little bit about social media and where it fits and how you feel about it. What role does social media play for you in your art practice?
I love that I can connect with other creatives throughout the world with it, and that I can see work that I would never otherwise be able to see. And I've developed relationships with people through Instagram, even though we've never met. It feels like we have almost. A lot of my art friends, you know, that I might reach out to if I'm having a bad day or whatever, or have a question, those are Instagram people that we may or may not have had a virtual coffee or whatever else, but we've definitely developed relationships, and that's been very important. On the other hand, it can be draining. I think it's challenging to feel like you have to keep sharing all the time. Of course, it's hard sometimes to not compare yourself to others. And there's all of those sides of Instagram or whatever social media you use, I think, that are challenging and sometimes sort of can get a bit unhealthy. So what I try to do is document what I'm doing. I'll take pictures as I go. I'll try to remember, just document the process. You know, I do take pictures, of course, that I'm careful about for submitting to art shows. That those pictures, you know, need to be good quality. But when I'm thinking for Instagram, I just might take a quick snapshot of a lot of my work has drips, and like I'll record like a drip going down the canvas or something that's not too time consuming. And I try to keep it about documenting the process. And that kind of mindset helps a little bit, I think, to kind of give me a structure for what I'm recording and what I'm trying to share. I sometimes need breaks from it, and that's okay. I try to take the weekends off a bit, you know, from posting. I will sometimes, but I give myself permission on the weekend to let go of it and be with my family. And I still will check other people's things if I have a moment, but other people's feeds or whatever. But there was a time that I was just like always focused on it. And like, I have to post every day. And I remember, you know, my husband being like, you're a little obsessed. Like, you know, you're a little like, can you, let me just finish this post. And if I don't, it's going to disappear and like whatever else. But so it's easy to get sucked in, but I think you can manage it if you just give yourself whatever boundary works for you in terms of time away from it and just sort of rational thought of, you know, this can be a wonderful thing, but it also can just be too much sometimes. So it's hard to find that right balance there, but I think it's important to kind of try. So anyway, that's how I've managed it so far.
I do love the idea of it being a place to document your process, because it is a really good place for that. Like looking back over years of work, sometimes
absolutely.
I look at Instagram and I go, you know what, I'm actually really glad that I posted, because I can see what I did several years ago. I can see the themes, the things that have showed up again and again, and also the changes, like improvements. Like it's such a handy thing to have all in one place. I think having that kind of focus brings it back to your art and your practice, which can be very helpful. I mean, I know there are all sorts of other things that are important that you can do on social media and promote your business and all that sort of stuff, the promotional side of things. But focusing in on the process, I think it takes away some of that kind of the ickiness of Instagram that sometimes you can feel when it becomes all very sort of salesy and, you know, all the different things that you're sort of pushing out. So I just really love that idea of documenting the process and taking breaks on the weekends. I think they're two really good, healthy social media approaches.
Oh, good. I'm glad you like that. It's true what you said about documenting the process, because you can scroll all the way back, like in my Instagram or many people, some people delete the older posts, but many artists, you can really, if you go back, you will see work that is clearly more beginner than whatever they're posting now, or at least someone with a career like mine, where I started as a beginner, you know, I mean, we all start as beginners, but I started on Instagram as a beginner. Not everybody, there are some professional artists who started their Instagrams already, you know, at the stage of being, you know, excellent professional artists. So you're right. It is a really interesting thing to go back and see those early days and the way one's art has evolved over time. It's interesting.
So what are you working on at the moment? What's happening in your art world?
So I'm going to have some pieces in a show in the Hamptons in New York this summer. So that's one thing that I'm working on. I also have a piece coming out in a book that a gallerist has put together, which I have never had that. So that's exciting. I'm also just working on some collections that I'm thinking of releasing myself in the fall. We'll see. I'm not trying to put too many sort of parameters on that, but I'm just making the work. And it's been interesting. I have been bringing or reinventing, I guess is the right word, some of those old canvases. When I moved into my bigger studio space, everything came with me. And so I unearthed those old ones that had been turned against the wall, and they came with me. And I separated my paintings into these are good and someone might want or buy or whatever. And these are really like, I wouldn't want these in the world. And those I have been reinventing completely. And it's just interesting how you can do that with a painting and how the more layers a painting gets, the richer in a way it is. Even when you can't see those underlayers, sometimes there's just a shadow or something, or you can scrape through and see something else. And it's like the history of the piece a little bit. So that's been kind of fun as well, doing that.
Do you work kind of full-time hours or part-time hours as an artist? Or what does your week look like?
I feel like I'm three quarters, if I'm honest. But I don't have any set hours that I make myself be in the studio or be home working on the computer. I do, during the weekdays, work every day. The weekends, it's optional for me. It depends what's happening. And sometimes I'm just itching to go and do something. And if I have time, I will. But other times it's about my kids and family. Sometimes taking a break is the right thing to do.
So I wanted to finish with one last question. And I know you know what the question is going to be around, because this series of interviews I've been focusing in on what success looks like for artists and the different ways that artists make a living from their art and how they feel as they do that. So the question is, what does success look and feel like for you as an artist?
So when I told you about my new studio space, which is full of light and large enough for me to have big works up on the wall and space enough to stand back and take a look and get perspective on them, that has been my dream for a few years. And it actually was the very top of the list when I made sort of a goal board one year. And it was outrageous goals that we would never really achieve. But just, you know, if you could dream and you could do what you want. Well, having a light-filled studio was the top of my list. So the fact that I have that now this year is, to me, a mark of success, that I'm really doing this, that I'm putting in those hours and it's bringing me joy. That's probably right now, to me, how I would define success. I also, of course, it's always a pleasure to have my work accepted into shows and or to sell a piece or to do a commission for someone. Those things are also marks of success, but really the one that rings most loudly in my heart is this new space that's giving me kind of more opportunity to create freely.
I absolutely love that. And I'm just thinking back to the beginning of this conversation when you said that you bought an easel and didn't touch it for 7 years. And now you are creating art freely in a beautiful studio space that allows you to move and to create multiple pieces, lots of natural light. And you're doing something that you absolutely love and wanted to do for a really long time. So it's amazing.
Yeah.
So well done.
It's really, it's so nice to actually speak about this with you, Laura. I mean, it's nice to take a break and just like reflect on, you know, the change over the last several years. It's really been a treat. I really appreciate you having me on.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your story. It's incredibly inspiring, and I look forward to continuing to follow along with your journey.
Oh, thank you. You too.
What an amazing story. If this conversation resonated with you, I encourage you to reach out to Stephanie. You can find her website at stephaniestarkart.com and look her up on Instagram at stephaniestarkart. And if you are sharing Instagram stories, be sure to tag Stephanie, and also you can tag me at Laura Horn Art. And if you want to find out more about my art and classes, head on over to laurahornart.com. I won't say too much here, but I do have a new class about to start called Sketchbook Sanctuary. Next week, I'm chatting with UK artist Emmeline Webb. Emmeline's story involves many big leaps of faith. It will make you realise that you don't need to have all your ducks in a row. I hope that you'll join us for that conversation and that you have a lovely week ahead.